Producer of this show is Scott Broder and Associates Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this show are matters of personal opinion of the producer and guests. The information discussed and reported in this program is believed to have been obtained from reliable sources, but the producer does not guarantee that the information is necessarily accurate and proper for any one specific listener's health care. Accordingly, listeners are advised to consult with their own health care providers to specific advice on how to care for particular illnesses or conditions, and the interaction of the information expressed in this program with any listener's existing medications and health conditions. Nothing stated during the course of this radio program is intended to be used in the diagnosis, care, treatment, or prevention of any disease. Before you begin an exercise program of any type, you should consult a licensed physician to determine your ability to participate in the exercise program.
American Health Radio is on the air, the program addressing matters of health, nutrition, fitness, and you. And now here's your host, Scott Broder.
Hello, everyone, and a very, very warm welcome back to another edition of American Health Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in this evening and finding us on your radio dial or perhaps the internet, wherever you may be listening nationwide. A special warm welcome goes out to all our new listeners along the Health Radio Network, especially our new affiliate in Boston that joins us for the first time, as we go border to border and coast to coast to bring you what we like to consider to be reality radio when it comes to health care in the U.S., long overdue in my estimation. Tonight's show is on BPH. If you don't know what that acronym stands for, consider yourself blessed and very lucky. If you know what it stands for, you probably have what millions of American men have right now called benign prostate hyperplasia. Now, benign's in the title, but if you have this condition, it's not benign at all. It's sort of a vicious quality of life disaster because it really does impede the life that you live, and we'll talk about that a little later. With our guest expert that I'll introduce momentarily, we're going to talk, folks, about various modalities, various technologies that are available to treat BPH. We're going to talk about prescription drugs all the way down to very severe and some might say draconian surgical procedures. Later in the show, we're going to drill down to a procedure that we have quite a few urologists listening in. I know thousands of men who are potential candidates for this listening in for to hear about Thermatrix. It's a dose-optimized thermotherapy, minimally invasive, and can be done in a doctor's office in probably less than 2 hours. Our guest tonight, one of the real all-stars in urology, a delightful fellow on and off the air. His name is Dr. David Kaufman, assistant professor of clinical urology at Columbia College of Physicians and Surgeons, and also attending urologist at St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital in my hometown, New York City. Dr. Kaufman, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm quite well, Scott. Thank you very much, and thank you for having me.
Oh, thanks for joining us tonight. Doc, BPH, what exactly is it?
I think the intro that you did is fairly appropriate. Benign prostatic hyperplasia is something that we all, or I should say all men, do need to deal with as we get older. It happens to all of us. There's no avoiding the problem. There have been studies that have shown that BPH starts appearing pathologically in men as young as age 30. That doesn't mean that 30-year-old men are suffer from the problem, but it is something that gradually progresses over time. Interestingly, some men can reach their 70s and 80s and have no problems at all passing their water, and other patients, as you've implied, are quite miserable because of this problem.
Boy, do we have men listening all over the country who tell us that this is not benign, this is ruining their lives. So that's why we're glad we have an expert of your caliber joining us. Okay, so you say men get it, you have to be over the age of 30. Does it typically strike men over the age of 50?
That's when the symptoms that are associated with enlargement of the prostate begin manifesting themselves, although certainly it's a bell-shaped curve, and there are men in their mid to late 40s who are starting to experience changes in their urinary pattern. But I think average age of the average individual would be in the 50s and certainly going on through the 60s.
Okay. Now, how do you diagnose this, Doc? Are there blood tests? You just take a patient's history, much like a neurologist would, and piece this together, or how do you tell if a patient really has BPH?
Well, the patient comes to us with problems voiding, so it's our job to determine what the cause of the problem is, and certainly in a vast majority of these individuals, the problem is benign prostatic growth. But certainly that is an assumption, and you do need to rule out any more possibly dangerous causes of this problem before one simply assumes that the problem is due to prostate enlargement.
Hmm. Is this the same as prostatitis, or is this different?
It's a completely different animal. Okay. Prostatitis is something that we see more commonly in much younger men than in their 20s and 30s, and prostatitis is caused by an inflammation, usually caused by infection, but it's an inflammation of the prostate gland. Now, interestingly, the symptoms are similar to the symptoms we see in BPH. Men with prostatitis have urinary frequency. They have a reduced caliber of their urinary stream. So it's important for the clinician to be able to differentiate between these two clinical entities, because clearly the treatment is very different. What works for prostatitis does not work for BPH.
Doc, on our show, we like to talk about staying out of the grip of these terrible conditions, whether it be BPH or any other serious condition. Is there anything you could recommend for folks to do that do not have this? Maybe they're 30 and they're 40 and they have no symptoms at all. Do you recommend something like salt palmetto or pumpkin seed or taking a lot of zinc or a lot of exercise? Does anything work?
That's a good question, and I'm not sure if I really know the answer to that. I certainly don't recommend any sort of therapy, whether it's over-the-counter or pharmaceutical, for people who are asymptomatic. I just think that's overkill. However, the question is more poignant when you consider your younger man, your man in his early to mid-40s, who's beginning to experience some very mild difficulties passing his urine. And in that individual, my first-line therapy would be some of the more holistic approach, some of the nutraceuticals, if you will, of this. And those patients, I very strongly recommend nutraceuticals such as saw palmetto. It kind of, in my mind, it goes under the category of can't hurt, may help.
Okay. Now, the prostate, that seems to cause us a lot of problems as we age. Correct me if I'm wrong, that's about a walnut-sized gland that probably uses more zinc than all your other organs put together. Is that more or less true?
That's true, but I should make the point that when it's a walnut-sized gland, that patient's not having any problems. Mm. It's when it becomes larger than walnut size that we begin to notice that the patient begins to experience difficulties with his urination.
Hmm. A lot of our listeners want to know, if you're diagnosed or you think you have BPH, is that the precursor, the first step to getting prostate cancer?
I think that's an excellent point, and the answer is emphatically not. These are two completely different pathological processes. So having BPH, for that matter, having prostatitis, in no way raises or lessens your risk of prostate cancer. It's a different disease entity.
If you could live with BPH, does it have to be treated, or is it something you could learn to live with?
There's really nothing compelling other than your quality of life to allow you to live with this problem. However, in rare cases, maybe 1% of all individuals, there are some serious problems that are associated with BPH, problems involving kidney function and kidney failure. But I'm happy to say that these occurrences are very unusual these days, because medical care is so much better than it used to be. And when patients are bothered enough by this problem, they seek medical care long before these more serious problems occur.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break, folks. When we come back with Dr. Kaufman, we're going to start with prescription drugs, what you could do if you suffer from this, and we'll get an overview from the doctor. But stay with us, please. We're going to talk about Thermatrix, which is a dose-optimized thermotherapy that's really sweeping the nation. You'll want to know about it if you have BPH or if you're one of the urologists listening in tonight. We'll be back with Dr. David Kaufman in a heartbeat. Hi, everybody. We are back. Thanks so much for staying with us. If you happen to be saying Mamma Mia three or four or five times a night because you keep getting up to use the men's room, you might have BPH. You've tuned into the right show. We're going to talk about a lot of different modalities, technologies that might help you relieve some of the problem. Doc, a few questions have rolled through the transom, so to speak, during the break. One of our regular listeners want to know your comments on this. Is it true most men die with prostate cancer and not because of it?
I think that is true, and I think it's an important statement. It probably wouldn't be inaccurate for me to say that if we live long enough, and hopefully we all will have malignant changes in our prostate gland. If autopsy studies have been done on certain patient age groups, and they have found malignant cells in the prostate glands of close to 90% of all men over the age of 80. So certainly, as we get older, our cells degenerate and undergo malignant change, but that is rarely the cause of the average man's death. When men are diagnosed with prostate cancer, however, earlier in life, in their 50s and their 60s, it is most likely a much more aggressive disease than the prostate cancer that we see in the asymptomatic man in his 80s or 90s.
Interesting. Doc, a lot of folks want to know about symptoms, how you measure this, and especially about an AUA symptom score. What exactly is that, and how important is it?
Well, I think it's important because it allows us to ask the same questions to every patient who comes to us, and that's what this score is. It's a series of seven questions that have been previously validated by numerous studies, and the answers to these questions, and it's a numerical grading system, and at the end of the questions we add up the scores associated with each answer, and the total tally of the answers to this question have been shown to correlate extremely well with degree of disease. So it's something that all men ought to receive when they go to their urologist's office, because it's important to establish a baseline of the AUA symptom score, and then once we prescribe treatment, it's important to follow that patient's AUA symptom score to have a more objective assessment of how well they're doing with therapy.
So that measures the baseline, much like getting an electrocardiogram measures the baseline of your heart?
Well, but these are just verbal answers to questions, and the questions are the right questions that urologists want to ask. The questions include, how often do you go to the bathroom? Do you feel urgency when you go? Is your urinary stream weak? Do you have to strain to initiate void? Do you feel like you have not completely emptied your bladder at the end of urination? And how often do you wake up at night to go to the bathroom? And depending on how often these different occurrences happen to a patient will determine what their numerical score is, which helps us get a summation and a total prostate symptom score.
Now, I noticed you've said a few times you go to your urologist. Obviously, they're specialists. You're on the higher end of the hierarchy. But how about most people that don't go to specialists? They just go to FPs and GPs and your local family doctor. Are these doctors capable of using AUA scores? Do they even know what they are?
Well, they certainly are capable of it, and I would encourage them to do it. Clearly, I don't believe you need to be a urologist to initiate therapy with pharmaceuticals. I think any family physician or internal medicine doctor can ask the right questions, do an AUA symptom score, come up with a diagnosis, and if that diagnosis is benign prostatic hypertrophy, BPH, I would give him, you know, full ability to go ahead and write a prescription for some of the medications that are available for the treatment of this. It's only when these medications fail or perhaps don't work at the outset that a referral to a urologist is mandated.
Okay. Now let's talk about these treatments. Somebody comes in and you diagnose BPH. Do you start off with something like Proscar, or what do you start with?
Okay. Well, the first thing we do is we ask the right questions. We do a good history, which includes the AUA symptom score. We do a physical exam, and we make sure that the prostate is enlarged to digital rectal exam. So that's the digital rectal exam that all men fear when they walk into the doctor's office. But once that's done, I think it's perfectly reasonable to counsel a patient about what's available, and watchful waiting is one option, meaning that if the problem really doesn't justify in the patient and the doctor's mind taking a medication on a regular basis, if the problem just isn't that much, a medication may not even be warranted. But once the two decide that medications are warranted, that brings us into the various options, pharmaceutical options that are available. And Proscar was probably the first drug that was available on the market. I was actually involved in the initial trials of Proscar a long time ago, about 15 years ago.
Wow.
And Proscar is a great drug, and it shrinks the prostate in almost everybody. So we've shown through numerous studies that after a man has been on a drug like finasteride, Proscar is just one of the brand name drugs that's available. So once a man's been on finasteride for several months, all of those individuals will have a 20 to 30% decrease in the size of his prostate gland. That sounds pretty good. What's interesting, though, is that symptom relief doesn't always follow decrease in size of the prostate. So I kind of make a joke with my patients that the prostate is not the only organ in the man body where size is not everything. The size of the prostate isn't necessarily the catch-all most important thing in the degree of a patient's symptoms. So yes, Proscar will shrink the prostate gland, but Proscar doesn't have, or finasteride doesn't have, as dramatic necessarily an improvement in symptom scores as the other class of drugs that are available, which are the alpha blocking agents.
Okay, is that something like Hydrin?
So Hydrin was the very first alpha blocker that was used for prostate enlargement, and your listener should probably know that these drugs were actually developed not for prostate enlargement, but for high blood pressure. But patients on these drugs with high blood pressure, and you know that the age range of those men with high blood pressure overlap the age range of men with prostate problems, and they would come to their doctor and say, listen, I don't know what my blood pressure is, but I'm sure as heck peeing a lot better than I used to. And that's what started these studies going. And I was actually an investigator in the early Hytrin studies, and these drugs are actually quite good. And in the last few years, the drug companies have actually developed prostate-specific alpha-blocking agents that have less cardiac effects, less effect on the blood pressure, and will focus mainly on urinary symptoms.
What's the biggest drawback, Doc, on taking products that you just mentioned?
Well, I don't think there's much of a drawback, and in my opinion, everybody with BPH, once they get to a point where they're ready for drug therapy, where the symptoms warrant drug therapy, in my opinion, everybody should start on a course of an alpha-blocking agent that's prostate-specific. I think that's perfectly reasonable and conservative, and I do. Most urologists have samples of these drugs in their office, and I'll offer a patient several weeks of a sample, have them try it, and have them come back to the office in several weeks to discuss the improvement. And more times than not, the patient notices a substantial improvement in their symptoms very quickly, within the first or second night.
Wow.
Now, you've asked me about drawbacks. I can talk about that if you'd like.
Yeah, what are the side effects people want to know about, especially the sexual side effects?
Exactly. So that's what I was segueing into myself. Actually, the latest incantation of the prostate-specific alpha blockers is a drug called uroxetral, and that actually has very little in the way of sexual side effects. Some of the earlier drugs that were used for this problem had an effect on ejaculation, that it caused a problem which we call retrograde ejaculation, which, mind you, did not affect the sensation associated with orgasm. The orgasm is felt the same, but the patients would come to the doctors and say, hey, doc, you know, it feels the same, but I'm shooting blanks. In other words, the nothing is coming out.
Oh, boy.
And that is, although most of these patients weren't interested in getting their wives pregnant at their age, but it was certainly psychologically distressing to many of these men.
Right.
And this latest alpha blocker, this fourth generation, if you will, uroxetral, has very little of that retrograde ejaculation effect. So there's not, other than that potential problem, there's really no real reason not to try these drugs as first-line therapy.
So you try those first. Let's assume they work for a while, or they don't work at all. Do you then look for, before we get into Thermatrix, do you look for a surgical intervention?
Well, you're asking good questions, and that's exactly what happens. Either they work for a while or they don't work at all, and the patient comes back to us and says, what's next? Well, you'll notice that up until now, other than an AUA symptom score and a digital rectal exam, we haven't really gotten too invasive in any kind of testing.
Right.
But it's at this point that I recommend testing to better understand exactly what the problem is, what the local anatomy of the prostate gland is, and to measure the size of the prostate gland. So at this point, once the first-line drug therapy stops working, I would recommend that the patient come back to the office and we initiate diagnostic studies.
What does that mean? How do you diagnose this? Do you do some type of biopsy?
No, biopsy is not something we need for this. Biopsy is something we do only when we're concerned about prostate cancer, and the scenario that we do prostate biopsies is these days is generally when there's an elevation of the prostate-specific antigen, the PSA, which is a blood test. So we won't go into that right now. But what we do, what I do, is I'll do a procedure called cystoscopy, which your patients could, your listeners could probably best visualize as a colonoscopy. It's that idea. It's a fiber optic scope, except it goes in the other end instead of the colon. So it's a fiber optic scope that we place in our office. It's a procedure that's performed under local anesthesia. It takes under 2 minutes. Yes, it's uncomfortable, but it's certainly tolerable by almost everybody. And this cystoscopy allows the urologist to get a clear visualization of the lower urinary tract. I am able to see, using my cystoscope, the configuration of the prostate gland, the local anatomy, the size. I'm able to look inside the bladder, make sure there's nothing else going on in the bladder that could possibly explain their symptoms. And I can get a good assessment based on the cystoscopy of what therapeutic option is best suited to that patient as the next step.
We're going to have to hold it there, Doc, temporarily. You probably hear the music coming up in the background. Folks, we're speaking to one of the real experts, the real pioneers when it comes to urology, Dr. David Kaufman, assistant professor of clinical urology at Columbia College of Physicians and Surgeons, and a lot more. When we come back, we're going to finish up on some surgical intervention and drill right down to thermatrix. You want to stay tuned if you can. We'll be back with the doctor in a heartbeat. Hi, everybody. We are back. Thank you so much for staying with us and lighting up all the lines as we go border to border and coast to coast to bring you reality radio when it comes to healthcare here in the U.S. Long overdue. It's about time. It's on the air. We're speaking to the one and only Dr. David Kaufman, one of the true leaders in urology here in the States. We're talking about BPH and various options available. Okay, Doc, somebody's on the products, these different products, whatever it is, Proscar, Hydrin, and they either stop working or they don't want to pay the money anymore for them or they're getting side effects. What's step two?
So step two, as I've said, is we do a battery of diagnostic tests in the office. All of them are office-based. We just spoke about the cystoscopy. The next thing we do is a quick ultrasound of the prostate to measure the prostate gland to know exactly what we're dealing with, and then we offer the patient therapeutic options for the next step. And certainly surgery is part of the discussion, but as you intimated earlier, it is somewhat archaic, and certainly it's at least in my practice, it's something that I leave for the absolute last resort. What's in the middle, sort of on that continuum of therapy between medication and formal prostate surgery, is a whole group of procedures which we call minimally invasive therapies, which are basically based on the principle of thermotherapy, that is using some modality to heat the prostate gland to a temperature that will cause tissue necrosis, cause the sloughing of cells and tissue from the prostatic urethra, open up the channel that men need to void through, the prostatic urethra. So thermotherapy. And within thermotherapy, there are several options, of which microwave therapy is my first choice, and that's the kind of device that Thermatrix is, and we'll spend some time talking about that. But there are other options in minimally invasive thermotherapy as well, and they involve laser therapy and radio frequency waves, and all of these options have their own inherent advantages and disadvantages. In my mind, the microwave thermotherapy is really the safest option, and that's why I've adopted that in my practice.
Okay. Now, we want to drill down into Thermatrix because we have so many of your colleagues listening in nationwide, actually worldwide, to get the latest update on this, and we have so many potential patients who apparently have done their research, heard the promos for the show, and are very interested. So tell us about Thermatrix. Tell us the good, the bad, what people should know about it, and how many of these procedures have you personally done?
Well, I think I've probably done my 99th or 100th procedure today.
Okay.
The patient asked me that himself, and I meant to go look back and start counting. But I've done about 100 of them in the past 2.5 years. All of the therapies I mentioned earlier were available to me, and I did my own due diligence and research and spoke to my colleagues who were involved in the different kinds of therapies, and I came to the conclusion that I wanted to offer my patients, yes, something that worked, but most importantly, and this harkens back to the old days when we took our Hippocratic oath to do no harm,
right.
Most importantly, I don't want to hurt anybody, and that's why I felt, and pretty much everybody universally agrees, that the Thermatrix microwave therapy is the safest with the least number of side effects or serious medical events. Actually, there are none that have been reported to the government related to this product, which is in contradistinction to the other products I mentioned, which have quite a number. Hmm. Thermatrix and microwave therapy in general uses, as one would imagine, microwave energy to heat the prostate gland. Thermatrix is a low-energy microwave technique where the temperature of the prostate gland is raised just enough to cause tissue necrosis. And there have been years of research on thermotherapy, and it's pretty much accepted by all physicists who do this sort of work, that the temperature that needs to be reached is between 45 and 50 degrees centigrade to achieve tissue necrosis. And that's what Thermatrix microwave strives to do and what it will do. It will raise the temperature of the prostate gland around the prostatic urethra between to 49 or 50 degrees for the course of this procedure, which generally takes 1 hour.
Doc, a lot of men want to know. I don't blame them. Is this painful?
Well, I, when people ask me that, I sometimes tell them, you know, no pain, no gain. But I'm being somewhat glib. This is definitely a procedure that can be done in the doctor's office with no formal anesthesia. What we do use is we use a anesthetic jelly that's instilled into the urethra for about 10 minutes before the procedure. We give the patient an oral medication, which is a pain reliever, but it's not a lot of sedation. My patient, you know, I practice here in Manhattan, and my patients come into my treatment room with a copy of the New York Times in their hand or a Walkman with some classical music, and the vast majority of them, I would say 95% of the patients, are able to tolerate the procedure, reading their book, reading the New York Times, listening to music without much difficulty.
Great. We're going to take a quick break here. Folks, we're talking about a procedure that if you have BPH, you definitely want to know about. It's called Thermatrix. Take a look at their website. It's very interesting. It's thermatrix.com, and let me spell that for you. It's thermatrx.com. Or if you'd like to see a person or speak to a person from the company, it's 1-800-328-3881. That's 328-3881. I'll give you that number when we come back from break. We'll be back in a heartbeat. Hi, everybody. We are back. Thank you so much for lighting up all the lines and calling in or emailing in from all over the country and all over the world. We're speaking with Dr. David Kaufman. We're talking about improving the quality of your life if you suffer from BPH, and I'm sure you know what that acronym stands for if you suffer from it. We're talking about Thermatrix right now. Doc, do you have to see a urologist for Thermatrix, or can you go to your GP or FP?
No, this is definitely a procedure that is done by a urologist in a urologist's office, by a urologist who is trained in performing Thermatrix microwave therapy. It's not something that you take lightly. It's an extremely safe procedure, but it's a safe procedure in the right hands. This is a procedure that's done in the urologist's office. I've mentioned that already. It takes about an hour from the time the machine is started to the time that the procedure is over. And I think we were talking earlier about insurance coverage
This.
Yes, it is covered by Medicare, and it's covered by almost all private insurers. Again, I practice in New York City, and every managed care plan that I participate in, which is most of them, are happy to have their patients undergo microwave therapy in the office because, quite frankly, it's less expensive for the insurer than certainly surgery that's done in the hospital, and even less expensive to the insurer than the cost of medications over the course of 4 or 5 years that the patient would be on it. So they're happy to pay the urologist to perform this procedure on their clients.
Okay, a lot of calls have come in about the website. Again, let me spell that for you folks. It's thermatrx.com, a little different than you would think phonetically. Or once again, let me give you the correct 800 number if you'd like to call in and speak to somebody. It's 800-328-3881. It's 800-328-3881. An interesting company, by the way. The company behind this is American Medical Systems, one of the leading healthcare providers in the United States. Okay, Doc, somebody comes in, you do Thermatrix. Is this permanent, or do they have to have it done like Botox every 6, 9, 12 months?
Well, that's a good question, and the answer is I'm not sure, because we've only been doing it for several years. But I imagine that it is not permanent. In fact, I kind of wouldn't wish permanence on anybody, because as long as the individual is alive, his prostate's growing. So I want his prostate to continue growing, so I want him to be alive. So the prostate definitely grows as we age, and whatever improvement occurs as a result of Thermatrix, I anticipate will be lost over the course of 4. And it seems that as of 5.5 years, I believe that's where we're at right now, the patients who are being followed, at least, still have a pretty significant improvement in their symptoms 5.5 years down the line. But I would imagine that it is going to end sometime. But what's the worst-case scenario? They have another procedure in 5 or 6 years. I think that's a small price to pay for the symptom relief that's realized by this procedure.
Okay, so somebody comes into your office, you pre-treat them, they get a slight anesthetic, you do the procedure, it takes 90 minutes at the most. Can you go back to work, or is this the type of thing you have to go home and go to sleep?
I would strongly advise that they go home. They probably could go back to work, but I don't think I've had any patient who does that. But certainly by the next day, they can go back to work. The day of the procedure, they've had some of the oral medications, and I think it's reasonable for them to go home and take it easy for the rest of the day.
Okay. Now, quite a few Americans, as you know, do not have any health insurance, and they don't qualify yet for Medicare. So if somebody came into your office and had this procedure, how much would it cost approximately?
Well, that's a personal issue that every urologist needs to establish for themselves. There are certain costs to a doctor doing this procedure. There are disposable costs, which are into the thousands of dollars for this procedure. I think that if you ask me personally what I would bill for somebody paying out of pocket, I think it would be in the $2,500 to $3,000 range.
It's not overly expensive. We are getting the high sign from the network. We have to take a break. Folks, we're speaking with Dr. David Kaufman, one of the leading urologists in the country, talking about Thermatrix. We have a lot more to talk about. Their website is Thermatrix.com. We'll be back in a heartbeat. Hi, everybody. We are back. Thank you so much for staying with us. We're talking about improving the quality of your life if you suffer from BPH, benign prostate hyperplasia, with one of the experts in the United States, Dr. David Kaufman from my hometown, New York, New York. Doc, we're talking about Thermatrix. The number one question that I would ask, and my listeners concur with this, what about sexual side effects?
Well, that's an important question and certainly reasonable. And the answer is there ain't any. I mean, there are just simply no reported sexual side effects to this device, to the application of this device. I should say that over 35,000 Thermatrix microwave procedures have been performed in the United States, and out of those, there has not been one reported case of sexual side effects, whether it's erectile dysfunction or ejaculatory disturbances. I think that's a pretty good record. It speaks for itself.
Can't be much better than zero. Yes.
Right.
I agree with you. Now, Doc, the AUA, okay, what do they say about a procedure like this?
The AUA published guidelines that, and the AUA is, by the way, the American Urological Association,
right,
our parent body of urologists, and they investigated the various minimally invasive therapies that were available in 2003 and came up with a published guideline where they discussed the different therapies that are available, the ones that I mentioned earlier, microwave, laser therapy, radiofrequency wave, or tuna therapy, and they made certain recommendations. And in a nutshell, the recommendations that were made is that of all the therapies, the best results were found with microwave therapy and radiofrequency wave therapy, and between the two, microwave and radiofrequency, the microwave seems to be better tolerated by patients in its application. So I think the clear winner, at least from the AUA's point of view, was microwave thermotherapy.
Wow, that's some testimonial. Now, would you consider this more efficacious than taking medication?
No question. That's been shown in study after study. The next question, of course, is this more efficacious or equivalent to prostate surgery, which we really haven't gone into? And the answer is no. This is not prostate surgery. This is not a TURP. Patients clearly have better results in terms of elimination of voiding symptoms and in strength of their urinary stream after surgery, but, of course, at the cost of doing surgery. So when I first presented this therapy. I said it was right there on the continuum timeline, right in the middle. It's something that is better than medications, but probably not as efficacious as surgery, but of course without any of the side effects or risks or involvement that a surgical procedure requires.
Doc, when you have Thermatrix and you go through the procedure, do you also take medications afterwards, or you just totally throw away your meds, so to speak?
Well, our goal is for the patient to get off of their meds eventually. But an important point that you remind me to make is that microwave thermotherapy, after following the treatment, the results aren't immediate. It actually takes 6 to 12 weeks for the patients to start noticing improvements in their symptoms. After all, we're heating the tissue up, we're not removing it. So that necrotic tissue needs to be flushed out by the body in order for the larger bore channel to be accomplished. So it takes the patient about 2 to 3 months to see the full effect of microwave thermotherapy. And for that reason, during that time, while we're waiting for the microwave effect to kick in, we do encourage our patients to stay on their medications. What I generally do is at the first post-procedure visit, at 1 month or 4 weeks after the procedure, at that point I have them go off of whatever medication they were taking, and almost everybody is able to tolerate that at that point.
Okay. Now, we have a lot of listeners who want to be empowered. That's why we're on the air. So what do you do, Doc? I think there's about 600 urologists who use this procedure, which is a tremendous percentage of urologists, but not everybody does. So what do you have to do? Interview your urologist and say, look, I'm interested in this procedure. Do you do the Thermatrix? Or what do you recommend the patient does?
Well, I think that's what they ought to do. I would definitely suggest that they work with the urologist that they've been working with. All urologists are familiar with this, whether or not they have a machine or not. They're all familiar with this technology, and I think if enough people out there in the United States go to their urologists, go to their physicians and say, listen, I'm interested in this procedure. Can you do something for me? That might motivate more urologists to go out and get trained, to get the machine themselves, to participate in an ambulatory surgery unit that owns a machine. There are lots of ways for doctors to treat patients with this machine.
You talked about training, and that's very important because a lot of your colleagues are listening. They want to know, and I'm trying to paraphrase it, how long did it really take you? How much continuing ed did you have to go through to come up the curve on this?
Well, I should say that the concept of microwave thermotherapy, it is certainly familiar to urologists. I mean, the procedure that we do, the technical placing of the catheter into the bladder, is something that urologists have done from the first day of their training. So there's nothing terribly foreign about this procedure. It's really more education. It's getting urologists to think about this, to be confident in it, to be able to identify the right patient, and to be able to answer all these questions that all of your listeners are asking so that the patient is satisfied that it's best for him.
Well, Dr. Kaufman, thank you so much for joining us tonight, taking time out of your very busy mid-Manhattan schedule there and joining us and talking about a lot of different options for patients, especially Thermatrix. We appreciate your time.
It's been my pleasure, Scott. Thank you.
Thank you, folks. We've been speaking with Dr. David Kaufman, one of the real leaders in urology. If you're interested in this procedure, and I strongly recommend you take a very close look at it, look at their website, thermatrix.com. That's thermatrx.com. Or give them a call, 1-800-328-3881. That's 800-328-3881. We hope you enjoyed the show with Dr. Kaufman, a really delightful man on and off the air. Have a wonderful week. God bless. We'll see you back here next Monday night. Bye now.